Well, it's Sunday evening, Easter Sunday, nonetheless. We've got Dr. Rene Boyce. He's here to bring you another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And Doc, very good evening to you. Today we have some company. We've been sponsored today. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening, Grayson. I am doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. How was your Easter Sunday?
It was good. We didn't have the traditional 5 o'clock service. And considering that I live quite a distance from where I do go to church, I was very happy about that. I was very happy about that part.
Well, I'm quite sure you will still praise him nonetheless.
Nonetheless. Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. Blessed Easter to everybody.
Yes, indeed. And a blessed Easter to Serbia, Central America, and the Caribbean as well, because they're on board this evening. And they have asked me to let you know and the rest of Barbados know to take care of your veins from chronic venous disease. The following advice is very useful. Take any opportunity to walk, as this is beneficial for venous circulation. Avoid sources of heat for long periods, such as hot baths, saunas, hot waxing, or long exposure in the sun. Maintain a stable weight by following a diet rich in fiber and drinking lots of water. Visit your doctor as soon as you feel pain and heaviness in your legs. If your ankles swell or veins become visible, as early diagnosis will allow for preventative measures to be taken. So then we'll come and see you, Doc, if that happens. So a big thank you to our sponsors this evening, Serbia, Central America, and the Caribbean. Thank you, Doc. Go ahead, please.
Yes, a special thank you to our sponsors this evening. And if you want to give us a call in the studio, 434-1790, to send us your queries via WhatsApp, 266-4862. So those numbers again, 434-1790 and 266-4862. I have a guest this evening. I'm looking forward to introducing him. But before I do that, let me just take the opportunity to speak about what is becoming a worrisome trend. I looked up the word ostracize. If by now, after all these years, the listeners don't know that I like words, well, certainly you have not been listening to the program, but I love words. So I took the opportunity to look up the word ostracize, and it means to exclude someone from society or a group. And if you hear something in one quarter, you tend not to pay so much attention to it because it could just be personal opinion. But if in every sphere of your life you are hearing the same thing being reported, then that causes you to think a little bit about what is being said. And there seems to be a trend where those persons who have been diagnosed with COVID-19 and had to be taken to our isolation centers, whether at Harrison's Point or Blackman Gollop or wherever the other isolation centers are, when they're sent back home, the other people in the community aren't treating them well, and that's a very worrisome trend because that's not the way we're supposed to live in community. Granted, we are supposed to be physically distanced from those persons who are not members of our family, but certainly to make people feel unwelcome in their own community is very unkind. And I'm always mindful that anything can happen to any of us. Anything can happen to any of us. And it could just as easily be you or me, and you wouldn't want somebody to treat you that way. So those persons who are not treating the persons who would have gone to Harrison's Point and so on, who are not treating them kindly, please, please desist from doing it, because it can just as easily be you, and they don't deserve it. Really, they don't. That was just my preaching for this Sunday evening, and we go on to our show. Don't look at me like that, Grayson.
I won't say a word, madam.
We go on to our show. Thank you. This evening, we have with us Dr. Andrew Ford. Good evening, Dr. Ford.
Hi, good evening, and good evening to the listeners.
Yes, thank you for joining us this evening. I was thinking of how I would introduce Dr. Ford, and Dr. Ford does so many things. He's into bodybuilding. Dr. Ford is into cricket. Dr. Ford is into clearly medicine, and I'm sure there are many other things that he does, but this evening we are going to be pouncing on him for his clinical skills as regards the skin. So thank you once again for joining us. What's the most exciting thing that you're doing now?
Well, just keeping safe during COVID and enjoying all the recreational things that help to make life whole. You know, it's a very stressful time for everyone. And I think everybody needs a diversion and something that will make everything feel better. So doing this show with you is fun. Doing the cricket show is fun. Watching TV is fun. The simple things that we take for granted.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's the simple things in life that we take for granted. And I really am trying amidst all the different things that I'm doing to remember to do those simple things. So what we're going to do this evening, we are going to just do a brief recap of some of the more popular, as it were, skin conditions. And then we're going to focus on the lower limbs with respect to venous disease and ulcers and all the other things that can happen with the legs. So everybody and their mother and two brothers and sister, somebody has had eczema. So let us start with eczema. What is eczema?
Before the good doctor gets started, we have one query here for you. Dr. Ford, I beg your pardon. I don't want to keep the gentleman waiting too long because I asked him to ask the good doctor the question. So he's going to present his question. And then when we're finished there, we'll come right back to you, Dr. Ford. I do beg your indulgence. I am very sorry. Notice I'm speaking to you, Dr. Ford, because I was just given a note by the host of the show. So I'm begging your indulgence. Let's go to the caller very quickly. Caller, can you hear us, please?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes. Could you pose a question, please?
There are two questions I want to pose. The first one, in the States, persons affected with COVID, they're using some infusion on these people and they are recovering. I would like to know if this treatment is available in Barbados.
Oh, I am not aware at this point in time of any infusions that are presently available here in Barbados for the treatment of COVID-19.
Well, right. I'm not sure either, but I think I do remember hearing it mentioned, I think, remdesivir. I think I may have heard of it in one of the press conferences. So it's possible. These infusions are very expensive, but I guess we may have to ask one of the experts at Harrison's Point.
Sorry,
what's your second question?
Your second query? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
Last Sunday when you had the gynecologist or something like that, I wanted to call in about this question, but I got in too late. Now, I would like to know if there's an optimum age for persons to have children.
What the gynecologists say is that if by 35 you have not become pregnant as yet, or that's when you're having your first pregnancy, you are termed an elderly prima gravida, meaning an old person for having your first pregnancy. As you age, the number of eggs, the quality of eggs seems to go downhill, as with everything else. And there is no recommended age by which you should have a child. There's so many different factors which influence when a person decides to have a child. But by 35, medically speaking, you're called an elderly prima gravida if that's when you first become pregnant.
Now, why I was asking this is, if there's an optimum age, I was saying that women can harvest their eggs at this age, men can harvest their sperm at this age. And then they decide to have a child, then they will use the eggs and sperms that they have harvested and should produce an individual with a much improved gene stock. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I don't know that there is alteration in the gene stock by harvesting sperm and eggs, but later down in this year, I believe within another month or so, there is a show on fertility medicine. So you can look out for that show where this discussion will certainly be had. And I'm I'm looking forward to the discussion that will come out of that show, because we're talking ethics, we're talking persons' opinions and so on. So you can look forward to that show.
Okay, thanks a lot, Doc.
You are very welcome, sir. You missed it last week, so I want to make sure that you get in this week and you got in very early. Now, the good doctor will not be too happy with me that I did that, but I'm begging her forgiveness. just reminding you that we're coming to you this evening with the kind compliments of Servia Central America and the Caribbean, committed to therapeutic progress to serve patient needs. It's all yours, Doc.
You make me sound like such an ogre, but anyways, we are on to Dr. Ford and eczema. So we were asking the question, what is eczema?
Eczema is an inflammation of the body that is common in individuals that have a sensitivity to their environment. And that sensitivity we speak of as being something called atopy. So it occurs in a group of, the gene pool where you get asthma and hay fever and inset bite allergies and eye allergies. So individuals with eczema have that, background in their family, and they tend to have these inflammatory events happening on the skin, mostly on the folds of the skin. So it can start from a very early age in the case of atopic eczema, and it's very itchy. And in the acute phase, it can be red or it can have little blisters. And in the chronic phase, it can be darker with lots of lines. But eczema is a common word that's used for that inflammation. And there are many different types of eczema based on their patterns. So there's seborrheic dermatitis. And the word dermatitis is used interchangeably with eczema. And also there's contact dermatitis. So even though eczema and dermatitis are used interchangeably, there are many different forms. So, but the one that is usually meant when we say eczema is the atopic dermatitis.
Some people say that when they drink orange juice or they get acid in their body, that tends to cause their eczema to flare up. What's your opinion on this?
Well, everybody has their own, we call it idiosyncratic responses. Everyone is different, except for identical twins, I guess they're the same. But you can have food triggers for your eczema. Milk and eggs and citrus can sometimes trigger some individuals, but there are many other triggers for eczema. They can be psychological, things like stress. It can be physical, things like heat or rough clothing. It can be chemical, let's say a soap or an additive or fragrance in some sort of perfume or even in a moisturizer. It could be the sun. So there are different things that can be the trigger for individuals with atopic dermatitis or other types of eczema.
So the hallmark of treating eczema would be moisturizing. I think I remember that one of the features of eczema can be some very, very dry skin. And part of the treatment is to ensure that the skin remains moisturized. What are some of the other things that can be done for those persons who might be suffering with eczema?
Yes, well, you did touch on a very important point. Individuals with eczema have very dry skin, and moisturizing with things that don't have lots of chemicals or fragrances, so white creams and greasy emollients are very important. But you have to try to control your environment as much as possible and avoid the extremes. So that means that you don't want it to be too hot or you don't want it to be too cold, because some people can get their eczema flared up if they go to the UK or another place where you can get winter weather, while others get it flared up if they sweat too much or if they're too hot. Similarly, as I mentioned, if stressful situations make you scratch, or if your clothing is such that it, let's say linen or some other hard clothing, makes you too hot or rubs the skin too much, that can cause a problem. And other things that cause itching can flare up your eczema. Let's say you were unlucky enough to get and scabies, or if, let's say, you got bitten by an insect and you started scratching, then eczema would be a part of a complication of that process, and you could trigger off your eczema in that way. We did mention food allergies as well, and for some people it just comes and whenever it wants to. So someone who has eczema has to be very vigilant, and it's a process of learning from your doctor and also being experienced with yourself, knowing the signs of the early stages of it coming on and trying to do something to prevent it becoming complicated and out of control.
Yeah, that's one of the important things that I think each of us needs to understand, that we're each individuals. What is going to affect you, Dr. Ford, isn't going to bother me, and vice versa. And certainly for those persons who are suffering with eczema, you learn your patterns, you learn those things that trigger your eczema, and you do your utmost to avoid those things. So let's talk about the, I want to say, cousin to eczema, psoriasis, because you hear psoriasis being bandied about as well. What is psoriasis?
Well, psoriasis is another dry skin condition, which is inherited. The severity and the various presentations is so wide that sometimes a lot of individuals wouldn't realize they have psoriasis, but it tends to be less itchy than eczema. But in a person of color, psoriasis can often look a lot like eczema, especially the chronic forms where you just have dryness. And in psoriasis, a silvery scale, scaliness to the dryness is important. So let's look at the different types of psoriasis, and that will give you an idea. Like, you can have psoriasis in your scalp where you have a dandruff problem that's a bit worse than your average dandruff problem, where the flakes are very thick, and when you pick them off, you can get bleeding. And that dry scalp can kind of filter into the hairline and affect the hairline behind the ears, the eyebrows, the crease of the nose, the angle of the mouth. And also you can have versions of it that affect just the palms and the soles, or you can have it just affecting the nails, causing the nails to be very thick underneath, to cause the nails to unstick, causing the nails to get little depressions or discolorations. But the most common version is the plaque psoriasis, where you get these oval shapes that look a lot like what the average person in the street would call ringworm. And that type is the most common type you see when you go on the internet and you look up psoriasis. So it's an oval shape, very dry area, but in a darker person, it will be also very, very dark. And psoriasis can also affect the folds, just like atopic dermatitis, but it can also affect under the breasts and the groins and between the bottom. And, you know, it can make you red all over, or it can make you very ill. So psoriasis has a multiplicity of manifestations, and you can have one of the various forms at the same time. But again, another condition that can be aggravated by stress or illness, and also extremes of your social life, smoking, drinking, you know, and also you can have injuries to the skin that can trigger psoriasis, something called the Koebner phenomenon.
So,
Yeah, so psoriasis is another condition that's chronic and requires a lot of educating, you know, so it's a relationship between the doctor and the patient, and the doctor has to teach the patient all the aspects of it so that the patient can really do the big management heavy lifting, because you just provide the patient with the tools and the information as to when to intervene and when not, and when to know they're in trouble. But all of these conditions can also get infected, so sometimes you do need antibiotics as well. But being aware of what your specific condition is and what affects it is the important thing for every patient. That's why the history is so important when you speak to someone.
The purpose of the Better Health Radio show is education, and what Dr. Ford has just said reinforces what we do here on the show. We provide you with the tools. We can't give you one-on-one management, but certainly if you have realized that some of the things today, for example, that Dr. Ford might have mentioned, rashes and itchy skin and certain things triggering rashes on your skin, then that should prompt you to say, you know what, let me go take a visit to my doctor. I've noticed this particular thing and maybe I should get it checked out. And that's what we want you to do. We want you to learn, how to manage your different conditions, pick up information here and there, be able to share it with other people. And so remember that this is the Better Health Radio Show. We are helping you to live your best life. And we're in with Dr. Andrew Ford today. And one of the things that I was thinking about earlier this evening when I was sorting out the show in my head is to remind persons that dermatologists, like ophthalmologists, are medical doctors first. So Dr. Ford didn't just study dermatology. He actually had to go right through medical school, as did the ophthalmologist that we had on first. And sometimes medical conditions are diagnosed by skin manifestations. And that's something that I found interesting. And this is why the world of medicine is so fascinating. You know, everybody's involved, and it's just wonderful. I really do love medicine. So we are on to pressure sores. And this is something that anybody can get a pressure sore once there is enough pressure, once you are in a particular area for a prolonged period of time. And what caught my attention was that prolonged period of time. How long? Maybe we should throw this out to the listeners. I want somebody to call in and say how long you think it takes for a pressure sore to form. Numbers 4341790. Let's see who's the first person that's going to be able to call in and say how long they think it takes for a pressure sore to start forming. And whilst we're waiting for that call, Dr. Ford, what are some of the complications that can arise as a result of pressure sores? As a matter of fact, without saying the time frame, why do people get pressure sores?
Well, that would happen in a specific individual that's kind of immobile and in a position for too long a period of time. Pressure sore prevention is really a nursing challenge and has to do with moving the individual a lot and having the right support, the soft support that would allow them not to be in one position for too long. But if you are elderly or you have reduced muscle mass, you know, that would really help for it to happen, because we have bony prominences pressing into the skin and the circulation will be affected and it can break down. And, you know, once you have a full ulceration of the skin, that can be quite painful. And once your skin barrier is broken, it can become infected. And that infection can either be localized or it can become generalized, and the generalized infections can be lethal. So, I mean, the pain and the infection are the big, big problems with pressure sores. And then it can also lead to infections in you know, the tissues or even go further into the body from there.
Very diplomatic, Dr. Ford, where you said that the infections can be generalized, meaning all over the body, and they can also be lethal, meaning that it will kill you.
Yeah. So,
just to let persons know that pressure sores aren't anything that we should take lightly, no pun intended. We really do have to concern ourselves with those persons who might not be able to move themselves. And some of the other factors that really do make a difference with pressure sores would be, like you had mentioned, somebody who has reduced muscle mass. So somebody who is very ill, who's very frail, and like the elderly, for example, somebody who might have end-stage cancer, somebody whose nutrition, for whatever reason, is not as it should be. And these are persons who are prone to developing pressure ulcers. We haven't gotten a caller as yet,
yes,
but I'm going to
leave
that.
That is true, Doc. Again, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but you're correct. We did not get a call with reference to your question, but we got a reply on the WhatsApp, and the person suggested that a few hours can start a pressure sore. Is that correct? That's what they said. A few hours can start a pressure sore. I spoke to your...
Well, perhaps, Gretchen, having known me so long, and you should have said to that person, how much is a few?
You are such a taskmaster. I'm going to assume that a few would mean three or about there. How close is that to the correct answer? Because they say a few hours.
Well, you're not too far off. Actually, within 1 to 2 hours, we can have the development of a pressure sore. So okay. I'm going to allow
you're going to give them that then?
Three.
You're going to give them that?
Because, I'm going to give you.
Okay, they say a few hours.
Yes, that's what I wanted to say. It's not a matter of weeks.
They came back later on and said two or three, and you said two, right? Did I get you correctly?
One. From about 1 hour, if you have enough pressure and all the other conditions are available, you can have the development of that pressure sore.
Right. Okay.
So for those persons who are taking care of persons at home, they're responsible for persons who cannot move. Remember that you should turn them ideally on the hour. We understand that it might not always be practical, but there are some other things that you can do called offloading. There are different mattresses that you can purchase and booties to put on their feet. And remember that pressure sores don't only occur on the heels or on the bottom, but wherever the surface, the person's surface body is laying on the bed or whatever. So you can get pressure sores on the ears. and on the elbows and anywhere that this, so whichever position is being pressured, you can get a pressure sore.
All right. Let me interrupt you again. I have two more queries. I believe one is for Dr. Ford and the other one might be for you. Do you wish me to read them or do you want me to pass on them? I don't want to interrupt your flow because...
No, certainly. Go ahead. All right. You go ahead.
Let's go with you first. This one says, can leg pain and vascular issues in sicklers result in irregular heartbeat or heart attacks? Can leg pain and vascular issues in sicklers result in irregular heartbeat or heart attacks? That was one query.
Okay, so leg pain leading to irregular heartbeats. I am a little hard-pressed to make the connection between the two. I know that sicklers, by virtue of the sickle cell problem, they are at risk for leg pain and development of ulcers, which is one of the topics we're going to cover a little later on. But I'm not so certain about the development of heart problems. If you have vascular problems in your legs, however, that is replicated in the arteries in your heart. So if you have problems with the arteries in your feet, certainly you will have some of the same problems in the arteries in your heart. So we had a gentleman who had called, I think Dr. Scantlebury was on, and he had spoken about what he was having, I think at the time was claudication, pain in his legs when he was walking because he had peripheral arterial disease. And upon further investigation, it was realized, if my memory serves me correctly, that he also had some trouble with the vessels in his heart. So he was able to go ahead and get his vessels opened in his heart and so on. All but right. I'm not sure about the leg pain and the heart trouble.
Okay. This next one. Go ahead, Dr. Ford.
Well, certainly it wouldn't be a common association, but a possibility in that case. It depends on the cause of the leg pain. I guess, as Dr. Boyce said, if there's a thrombus, let's say in the veins, in the deeper veins,
yeah, DVT, yeah,
it can lead to embolism, and that could increase your heart rate. Or if something happens in an artery and goes into your heart, then and you get vegetations or growth there, or something happens, it could occur, but it's not a common association with leg pain. So if that person knows a sickler or is a sickler with leg pain, I don't think it should be their primary worry of that happening to them, even though it's a possibility.
Okay, this one says, good evening. Are there any hair conditions that lead to hair loss in women in the crown and sides of the scalp? The hair loss occurs repetitively after the crown of the scalp becomes very sore. Do you wish me to repeat?
Okay, well, of course there are quite a few well, there are quite a few conditions that can cause that. And I'd like to say that hair loss or alopecia can be scarring or non-scarring, and certainly can be in one area or generalized. The specific one the questioner asked about, once there's soreness or discomfort, it suggests that there's inflammation there. And inflammation can either be infective, let's say it's bacterial. You can get a folliculitis, and that can cause hair loss. And then as the folliculitis resolves, once it doesn't damage too many of the hair follicles, you can regrow your hair. One of the common conditions that are associated with irritation of the scalp is something that's called CCCA, which is it's called a cicatricial and scarring alopecia, and that's something that's thought to be due to chemicals or the use of hot combs or sometimes the combination with bacteria, and that can be a more permanent form of hair loss. And even something as simple as a hair pulling habit, let's say a patient is someone who has repetitive habits or is what we call OCD, or someone who has a habit tick due to stress and pulls the hair, something we call trichotillomania, that can cause a focal or a localized form of hair loss associated with discomfort. So the real answer is that there are many different versions that can be associated with hair loss in men and in women. But the important thing is for you to go to your doctor, because the story of what happens, an extensive story that we call a history, as well as a clinical examination, helps you to narrow down the actual cause so that the person can have an answer. But if you do it theoretically, the answer is quite wide.